Chapter 40, Society and the Common Good. Section A, Interrelations Among Men. Thus far, we have studied the ordering of man to the good, especially in Chapter 37. Now we have to see the ordering of men towards one another. What is called political philosophy, from Greek polis, equaling city, or political science, or also social science, from Latin socius, equaling fellow, social ethics, or social philosophy. It is an extension of the metaphysics of the good to society, and should not be confused with the art of politics. See the difference between art and science in Chapter 6, Section C, Chapter 8, Section D, and Chapter 38, Section F. Our concern is not the particular political systems which nay exist, but the principles that should be enshrined in all of them. The fragmentation of the sciences has spawned a tendency to separate political science from ethics, as well as to separate economics and sociology from ethics. But this is a grave error, because whatever touches on man is primarily ethical, and therefore metaphysical. Not to consider man in relation to his ultimate end gives a distorted view of man. See Chapter 8, Section A, Chapter 25, Section C, and Chapter 34, Section C. Political philosophy is part of metaphysics. It studies the being of society, and specifically the good of society. Men have a natural inclination among themselves in order to reach their common good, which is God. From the ordering of every man to the essential good derives the ordination of men to one another, whereby they help one another by communicating the good to one another, which is proper to spiritual beings. It is primarily in the spiritual order that men have to help one another. The spiritual faculties of man are intelligence and will. As we have seen in the metaphysics of man, with the intelligence, men help one another in acquiring the truth, in spreading it and dispelling the darkness of error. The will, since its object is the good, helps to spread the good to one another through virtuous behavior, good example for the sake of others. Thus, the most important goods to be communicated socially are education and good example. In the supernatural order, this spiritual help is called apostolate. The opposite is to do evil and to spread error, which is the greatest lack of love for others to the extent that it removes one's will from its ordination to God, and thereby corrupts society as a union of men. Section B, Friendship and the Love of God. The union of wills among men is what brings about the ordination of men to one another. Two persons whose wills are united, even though they may differ, disunity is not the same as difference, are called friends. As we mentioned in Chapter 33, Section A, St. Thomas says, Contra Gentiles, following Aristotle, that men are naturally friends. We notice this in the instinctive reaction of a man to help another man in difficulty. This tendency flows from the natural ordination of men to one another. Nevertheless, since activity is required to reach the good end, the will has to enter into it. It is not enough to be united in the abstract. Men have to be united in practice through their wills, and this is the source of friendship. But wills are united when they all tend to the common good. What disrupts and corrupts society is, therefore, the self-will of men who oppose their own will to God's, of those who refuse to forgive, to understand, and to care. We can distinguish two elements of friendship. One, wishing good to the other, and two, doing good to him. How are they implemented? We have seen in Chapter 37, as well as in natural theology, that one should love God more than one's neighbor, since, if one loves someone more than God, then God is no longer the common good. This means also, however, that we should love our neighbor for the love of God. our neighbor can never be our last end. The root of our love for our neighbor is the love of God. This is what makes it solid, lasting, and true. It is what makes a person bear patiently with the defects of one's neighbor. If there is no love of God, what happens is that, since no one is perfect, the defects always stand in the way. If one does not love God above all things, one cannot love anybody else. Any love, then, is purely selfish, i.e., love with self-interest. But if there is real love of God, love of one's neighbor necessarily follows. The natural tendency to friendship, however, has been damaged by original sin, and that is why men do bad things to one another. In the supernatural order, this natural love of God and neighbor has been raised to the love of charity, which is far superior to it. Natural love is directed to the acquisition of good. Plato calls this love eros, to which Aristotle adds what he calls philia, or friendship. There is always this element of wanting to acquire good in natural love, and this is in itself good. But the supernatural love of charity goes beyond that. It is rather the love of God for his creatures, see chapter 24, section C, which God wants to share with his creatures. Recall the gospel passage in St. John's, chapter 13, verses 34 to 35, that you may love one another as I have loved you. The word used for love here in the original Greek is neither eros nor philia, but agape. This makes a big difference. It is neither the love of acquired good nor that of mere fellowship, but the pure love of giving. The love of God for his creatures. See chapter 36, section B, and chapter 37, section C. It is not in search of some good, because God is the good. Therefore, it is pure self-giving or benevolence. This is the supernatural charity, agape, which Christians are asked to live, giving oneself without limits, as God gives himself. That is why it perfects and transcends the natural love. Section C. What is society? Not every gathering of men is a society, but only that in which men are united for common end or common good, for the sake of which they organize themselves. If we analyze the causes, metaphysical analysis, of civil or political society, see chapter 33, section B, we find that the first of all the causes in the order of importance is the final, i.e., what motivates it, as distinct from the efficient, which brings it about. This is the common good, namely, God as the end of society. Love for the common good is the force that keeps society together. To the extent that this love diminishes, society decomposes or disintegrates. Withdrawing from God leads men to withdraw from one another. See chapter 37, section H, and chapter 39, section C. How should the internal order of society be kept so that it does not disintegrate? Through the right ordering of each person to God as last end. See chapter 37, section H. And how does a person direct himself to the common good? Through his will, i.e., through virtue. See chapter 39, section F and G. Every person in society should aim at moral perfection by trying to acquire the moral virtues and to communicate them. This is the basic force of cohesion for the being of society. All other goods to be pursued by society, material development, health, education, and culture, must be ordained to the moral growth of the persons therein. The efficient cause of society, on the other hand, operates through the free activity of men flowing from the natural inclination of their will. While men are the immediate efficient cause of society, it is ultimately God who has wanted it by creating man sociable by nature. See chapter 33, section A. There is no need for a formal or explicit contract on the part of men to set up a civil society because it blossoms forth, so to speak, naturally and willingly. Once it is constituted, society has a unity of order, which consists in both 1. An interdependence of all its members, and 2. A subordination of ranks according to authority. The latter is necessarily required in order to foster and promote the common good by coordinating the activities of everyone, not because man is bad by nature and needs to be tamed, as Machiavelli or Hobbes would say. Authority also necessarily comes ultimately from God, because by nature all men are equal, and so, if some are actually placed above others in the organization of society, it must be because God has given them that power, since no man has it by nature. See chapter 33, section A. Therefore, all authority must be exercised under God, i.e., in accordance with the natural law. See chapter 33, section F, and chapter 38, section A. The most important natural, as distinct from supernatural, authorities are the parental and the political, corresponding to the two basic natural societies. See chapter 33, section B. Other authorities at the service of these, in accordance with the principle of subsidiarity, see chapter 38, section B, are the academic and the professional. On the other hand, and in a different sense, supernatural or religious authority is the highest in the sense that it is most directly related to God, although it should not interfere with natural authorities in what is strictly temporal and thereby optional. Inequality in society is therefore natural from an existential point of view, but there is a basic equality of nature and of destiny, same origin and same common good, which is the ground of the fundamental and inalienable rights which every man has. Section D, History and Culture. The succession of events in time affecting men and societies is called history. See chapter 33, section C. Strictly speaking, only the free acts of men constitute history. History in itself is not a being or a substance, see chapter 13, section B, nor is society a substance. The individual men, real substances, are the ones who make history and society. Strictly speaking, the expression, history will judge, does not make sense, since history does not do anything. We cannot, therefore, speak of history as moving by inexorable laws, as we already said. When men are good, there is progress. When they are less good, there is decadence. It depends on what men decide to do. That is why we cannot forecast the future of mankind, while we can predict an eclipse of the moon, for example, since it is subject to physical laws which are predictable. In the case of history and society, everything is conjectural and hypothetical regarding the future. This is the standard to gauge progress in history and culture, the pursuit of the common good, which depends on the free activity of men. Section E, Ordering of Intermediate Societies to Civil Society. Societies which do not pursue the common good as such, i.e., the good of all men, but only a particular good, are naturally subordinated to civil society, i.e., the society concerned with the common good as such. The family and civil society are natural societies, as they aim at the good of man as such. See chapter 33, section B. Other societies are, on the other hand, artificial, i.e., made voluntarily by men for a particular purpose. The actual form which an organized civil society takes is also artificial in this sense. Patriotism, or the orderly love for one's own civil society, is a virtue, while a nationalism consists in loving one's country to the exclusion of others is wrong, as it is contrary to the common good as the good of all men. Section F, Ordering of the Person to the Common Good of Society. The personal good has to be referred to the common good, since society is the means for the person to attain his perfection. The more intense good is more universal, and so it is more noble to want to do good to the entire society than to oneself alone, and it is better to want to do good to all societies than to only one. Therefore, the rectitude of the love for a personal good depends on its ordination to the common good. Is it good for me to get a good education? Yes, if it is for the common good, if I can thereby serve society better. Is it good for me to make a retreat so as to improve my spiritual life? Yes, if it will make me a better person to serve others. To similar questions, the answer is yes, if it helps or is directed to the common good. See Chapter 37, Section H. On the other hand, whoever prefers his own good, egoism, to any other good, in a certain sense becomes like an animal, because it is proper to the animal to seek its own individual good without the desire to transcend it, as is proper to the spiritual creature. The person has to ordain himself to the common good of society, but understanding this as ultimately ordained to the common good which transcends society, which is God. When the good of society is not subordinated to God, then sin enters into society. The subordination to the rulers and to the laws of the land is due only in so far as they are related to the natural law and thereby to the will of God. In case of conflict, all other things being equal, the common good must be preferred to the personal good, even if this demands sacrifice. But we cannot do anything evil to a person, even for the sake of the collectivity, unless it is a case of self-defense. However, strictly speaking, a real moral conflict between a personal good and the common good arises only in a society which is not ordered, where either the common good or the personal good are misconceived. If every part of society is ordered to God, no conflict arises. Only if one of those parts wants its own good in a disorderly way does conflict arise. If this happens, the damage occurs both in the parts and in the totality. And the more influential the part, the greater is the damage to the totality. That is why the egoism of someone in authority is all the more damaging and has more far-reaching effects. If there is disorder in relation to the common good, order must be restored by the legitimate authority by means of measures restricting a particular good for the sake of the common good. If the authority acts against the common good, it is necessary to resist the authority. But how to resist this type of authority is another matter. Physical violence can only be justifiable in very extreme cases, as it usually creates more problems than it solves. As a rule, passive resistance should be employed, i.e., refusal to obey the unjust laws or rulings. The person, as distinct from society, has a direct ordination to God, see Chapter 32, Section C, and Chapter 37, Section B. The person exists by himself, substance, and is immortal, because God loves him for his own sake and not in relation to another being, as he loves animals, for instance. The esse of the person is thus directly related to the subsistent esse of God. All the material creatures are ordained to the spiritual creatures, and each person is ordained to the good of his own species and to the good of society, not in his entire being, but only in so far as this will lead him to God. all forms of materialism, by rejecting the spirituality and immortality of the human soul, tend to see the individual as a mere instrument of the species. And thus, they introduce population control programs which degrade the dignity of the human person that transcends society. Persons are not for the utility of anybody else, but directly for God. Precisely because of this, they are the only beings whose operations are directly related to the common good. See chapter 37, section H. Section G, peace and war. Society, when rightly ordered to the common good, has the twin goods of unity and peace. Peace can be considered first in the individual person. In this sense, St. Thomas says that it is the repose of the appetite in the possession of the good. God is the good of man, see chapter 36, section B, and therefore true peace exists in the soul only when one loves God. The joy and peace one may experience with other goods is only temporary. No partial good can really bring lasting peace. No good can satisfy man completely except God, the infinite good. Since we cannot attain the possession of God perfectly well, true peace in this life is imperfect. Perfect peace exists only in the possession of God in heaven, see chapter 36, section D. But, so as not to confuse peace with the immobility of death, St. Thomas also says that peace requires struggle in order to remove the obstacles, in his book Summa Theologiae. And as for unity, here also it comes from being totally ordained to good. The more one loves God above all things, the more one is unified or has unity of life. Peace and unity in society are the result of the peace and unity in the persons therein. If those persons love and want the good, they are all united in peace, since there is no reason for quarreling. On the other hand, if they seek other goods in preference to God, the fragmentation of ends leads to conflicts which disrupt unity and peace. If the ordination to the common good, which is God, has been broken, all forms of substitute humanitarianism or philanthropy are futile. Strife and war are, therefore, always evil. They are the expression of sin, the separation of man from God, see chapter 39, section C. But it is also true, however, that unfortunately there are sometimes necessary evils. War may, in a particular case, be a necessary evil if certain moral conditions are fulfilled, namely, 1. If there is a just cause, example, to thwart those who are destroying the common good fatally. 2. If it is motivated by a right intention in search of the true peace. 3. If it is promoted by public authority and not by individuals. These classical conditions are very difficult to fulfill. And with the horrifying escalation of the destructive power of nuclear weaponry, they have become all the more restrictive.